Alexander Hamilton. Southeast of the United States, in the West Indies, there is a tiny island called Nevis. It was upon that island that Alexander Hamilton was born. His father was a member of a famous Scotch family, and his mother was the daughter of a Frenchman who fled to Nevis for religious reasons. The first years of Alexander's life were carefree and happy. The great white house of the Hamiltons, which overlooked the blue Caribbean Sea, was like a fairy palace to the child. His French mother read wonderful tales to him about the heroes of France, and his father told him of the brave men of Scotland. Soon the boy could speak both French and English. Many of the people of the island, who called at the Hamilton home, thought that Alexander was very clever for his age. The happy days of Alexander's childhood did not last long. Before he was 12 years old, his mother died, and his father lost all his money. For a short time, the boy stayed with an aunt, but soon he began working as a clerk for one of the island merchants. A year later, he was placed in full charge of the business while the merchant made a trip abroad. While acting as head of the business, he wrote to a friend that he disliked his work. He could see no future in it. He felt that he could do great things if only he had the chance. Soon, something did happen. The islands of the Caribbean Sea are sometimes visited by great storms called hurricanes. One of these storms, which lasted for 3 days, swept over the islands and ruined thousands of dollars worth of property. Houses were wrecked, cattle were killed, and sugarcane fields were destroyed. Young Hamilton wrote a splendid account of the hurricane and sent his story to the paper. It was printed, and everyone who read it said that the writer was a very brilliant person. It was learned that the young clerk, Alexander Hamilton, was the writer. His friends decided that he would have to go away to school, where he would be sure to receive a proper education. Everyone was sure that he must not waste his life on a little island in the West Indies. The idea of leaving the island suited Hamilton exactly, and when his friends raised enough money for him to go away to school, he gladly accepted the chance. At that time, Hamilton was about 16 years of age. He took passage on a sailing vessel bound for Boston. When he landed at that port, he went south to New York and began to search for a good school. Finally, one at Elizabethtown, New Jersey, was selected. By hard study, he soon completed the work there and was ready to enter college. The nearest was at Princeton. Hamilton asked the president to allow him to pass his examinations as fast as he was ready without waiting for his slower classmates. The president would not have a student in his school who wanted to do his college work so quickly, so Hamilton went to King's College, now called Columbia, in New York. There he completed the work in less than the usual time. While Alexander Hamilton was a student in college, he made a trip to Boston. The Boston Tea Party had occurred just a few days before, and the people were still very much excited. Hamilton was always interested in new movements and new people, so he took pains to learn all he could about the trouble between the colonies and England. He was told about the Stamp Act, the tea tax, the navigation laws, and the writs of assistance. He saw the English soldiers who were housed in the homes of the people of Boston. Finally, he was convinced that the colonists were right in opposing England. Hence, when he returned to New York, he was a warm patriot. Soon after his return to New York, Hamilton attended a great mass meeting in the fields just outside the city. At this meeting, the speakers told of the wrongs the colonies had suffered at the hands of England. Hamilton listened for a long time. The speakers did not seem to be able to touch the heart of the matter. At last, Hamilton lost patience and strode up to the platform. The chairman was very much interested and surprised when this young man, who was hardly more than a boy, asked permission to speak to the crowd. As the chairman hesitated, someone shouted, "Let him talk. Let's hear what he has to say." Hamilton was allowed to address the crowd, and soon he had them cheering. He made his points in clear-cut language that the people easily understood. After that, when he appeared on the streets, he was pointed out as the college boy who was able to make such fine speeches in the cause of freedom. The speech at the Fields of New York marked the entrance of Alexander Hamilton into American politics. Soon a pamphlet, or little book, which he wrote to defend the acts of Congress, was being read by everyone. In it he declared that the American people must support the measures of Congress if the cause was to be successful. The president of King's College, Dr. Cooper, did not agree with what Hamilton had written. Dr. Cooper believed that England was right in all her acts and that the colonists were disloyal subjects. One evening, as Hamilton was nearing the home of the president of the college, he heard the cries of a mob. Soon he found that a crowd was about to break down the door of Dr. Cooper's home. Hamilton rushed up the steps and asked the leaders of the mob why they were storming the house. They told him that Dr. Cooper was a Tory and an enemy of the colonists. Hamilton urged them not to destroy property and injure harmless people. While he was talking, Dr. Cooper raised an upper window and looked out. When he saw who was talking, he thought that Hamilton was urging the mob to break down the door, so he called out, "Don't believe him! He is crazy!" Hamilton talked on, and the doctor fled out the back door and later took refuge on an English man of war that was in the harbor. By this time it was very clear that war would soon be declared between the colonies and the mother country, England. Hamilton got ready for the next event. He gathered together a band of patriots who named themselves Hearts of Oak and began drilling them for the battles he knew they would soon have to fight. Hamilton knew very little about how to drill and fight, but his men knew less, so he studied the rules of war in the evenings and taught his soldiers what he had learned when he met them in the next afternoon. When war was finally declared and New York started to raise an army, Alexander Hamilton was elected the captain of the first company of artillery that was formed. At that time, he was less than 20 and in command of many men who were older than he, but who followed and obeyed him without a question. Soon Hamilton was noticed by General Greene, who told Washington about the dashing young artillery officer he had seen. George Washington was always looking for men who were able and trustworthy, men whom he could trust to do things quickly when they were given orders. When he heard of Alexander Hamilton, he sent for him. Washington was pleased with Hamilton's appearance and offered him a place on the general staff with the rank of lieutenant colonel. This was a great step, and soon he became Washington's aide. In this position, Hamilton wrote letters and carried messages to prominent men throughout the colonies and to Congress. He knew almost as much about the war and the conditions throughout the country as Washington himself. In the camp and on the field, Hamilton was popular with his fellow officers, who called him the Little Lion because of his small size and his great bravery. Alexander Hamilton was a man of action. Although he liked his work as Washington's aide, he much preferred to lead a company of brave men into battle. Often he asked to be transferred to one of the fighting units of the army, but Washington needed him at his side. As Hamilton passed Washington on the stairs one day at headquarters, the general stopped and said he wished to see him on important business. Hamilton was hurrying to deliver a handful of papers to Lafayette, also a member of the staff, who was in a room on the floor below. He continued on his errand, talked with Lafayette for a short time, and returned. At the head of the stairs, he was met by Washington, who said, "Colonel Hamilton, you have kept me waiting at the head of these stairs these 10 minutes. I must tell you, sir, you treat me with disrespect." Hamilton, very much surprised, replied, "I did not know it, sir, but since you have thought it necessary to tell me so, we part." "Very well, sir, if that be your choice," the general replied. Washington, Lafayette, and the friends of Hamilton tried to get him to change his mind, but they did not succeed. There was a chance for active fighting, and he was given charge of a body of light infantry in Lafayette's division. At Yorktown, he led his men in a brilliant attack on the defenses of the enemy. After the Revolutionary War, Hamilton returned to New York and studied law. Soon he was admitted to the bar. He became one of the ablest lawyers in the state. However, he was more interested in the affairs of the country than he was in building up a great fortune for himself. The young nation was deeply in debt, and no one seemed to know what to do. Hamilton believed in a national bank, and it was partly due to his efforts that the Bank of North America was opened in Philadelphia in 1781. This bank was to handle all the government money. As a member of Congress from New York, Hamilton stated to his fellow members that this nation must have a strong central government to be successful. Many of the congressmen believed in state rights or that separate states were supreme. They strongly opposed any attempt to strengthen the national government and weaken state powers. When the Constitution was written and adopted by Congress, Hamilton steadily fought for a strong central government. He did not succeed in getting all his ideas adopted, and although he was not entirely satisfied with it, he did all in his power to have it accepted by his state. Together with James Madison of Virginia, Hamilton wrote a series of papers called The Federalist, in which he explained to the American people why the Constitution should be accepted by the states. George Washington, the first president of the United States, appointed Alexander Hamilton Secretary of the Treasury. Thomas Jefferson was also a member of the president's cabinet. The two men held opposite views on most political subjects. Hamilton believed in a strong central government and was an aristocrat. Jefferson stood for state rights and had great faith in the ability of the common people to govern themselves. The two men were constantly quarreling about government policies. Hamilton read the Constitution carefully and said it meant the President and Congress had unlimited power. Jefferson said that the central government had only such powers as were named. All others belonged to the states. The fight between the two statesmen became bitter when Hamilton, as Secretary of the Treasury, put forth his plans to raise money to pay the debts of the nation. Before the question of taking over the state debts was decided, Congress began to talk about a proper site for the national capital. The northern representatives wanted New York or Philadelphia to be the seat of government. The southerners urged that a point in the south be chosen. As the matter was debated, Hamilton saw a chance to settle at one stroke the question of taking over the state debts and the location of the capital. The southern states were most strongly opposed to his plan, so he said if they agreed that the central government should pay all war debts, he would see that the national capital was built in the south. The plan was accepted, and Washington, in the District of Columbia, became the capital. Under the newly adopted Constitution, Congress could tax the people. It was Hamilton's duty as Secretary of the Treasury to decide how this was to be done. Money was badly needed to repay loans made to the government by foreign nations and by American citizens. Hamilton suggested that a tax should be paid on all whiskey and upon all goods brought from other countries. Under this plan, all the state debts were also to be paid by the national government out of the central treasury. These ideas were opposed by Thomas Jefferson and all others who believed in state rights. They were sure that they were only new ways of weakening the states and making the national government more powerful. Hamilton's dream of a strong central government was fast coming true when the election of 1800 took place. Thomas Jefferson, who had been Hamilton's bitterest enemy during Washington's term as president, and Aaron Burr, a New York politician, received an equal number of votes for the presidency. When such a thing happened, Congress had the power to decide who should be the president and who should be the vice president. Both Jefferson and Burr wanted the higher office. Alexander Hamilton was a man whose advice was always well received by the thinking men of his party. The man who had his support was sure to win the honor of being president of the United States for 4 years. Hamilton distrusted Jefferson's democratic ideas. He was not sure that the common people knew enough to govern themselves as they should be governed. On the other hand, Aaron Burr was known to be a man who could not be trusted. If he became president, all the careful work of Washington and his followers might be ruined. After careful thinking over the matter, Hamilton decided to throw all his support in favor of Thomas Jefferson. This he did, and Jefferson became president while Aaron Burr received the office of vice president. Burr knew that Hamilton had spoiled his plans, and he resolved to be revenged. The next 3 years were spent in hard work by Hamilton. He had many warm and true friends, but he also had many enemies. One evening at a theater party, young Philip Hamilton heard a politician make a disrespectful remark about his father. He challenged the man to a duel, and the two met early one morning across the harbor from New York at Weehawken Heights, New Jersey. Young Hamilton was only a boy, just past 18, and he fell mortally wounded at the first shot. The death of this son was one of the greatest sorrows of Alexander Hamilton's life. 3 years later, he too was to fight a duel on that same spot and to lose his life at the hand of a political enemy, Aaron Burr. Before Burr's term of office as Vice President of the United States had expired, he ran for the governorship of New York. For several months, the New England states had been dissatisfied, and there had been some talk of their withdrawing from the Union and setting up an independent republic. Hamilton believed that Burr was ambitious to head such a movement, and that if he became governor of New York, he would attempt to build a new nation out of that state and those to the north. Such a plan, if it succeeded, would mean that the United States of America would disappear, and that in its place we would have a number of little countries that would always be quarreling among themselves. Alexander Hamilton had spent too many years in building one nation of 13 weak colonies to see all his work ruined by Aaron Burr. As soon as Burr announced that he was a candidate for the office of governor, Hamilton took the field against him. He fought him bitterly, and when the ballots were cast, Aaron Burr was not elected. For a second time, he had been defeated by Hamilton. Burr's anger and hatred were so great that he challenged Hamilton to fight a duel. Aaron Burr spent several hours each day in pistol practice while he was waiting for the day of the duel. Alexander Hamilton continued with his daily work at his law office and in the courtroom. None of his friends knew that he was soon to meet his enemy, although Burr's daily practice aroused some curiosity. At 7 o'clock on the morning of July 11, 1804, Hamilton was rowed across the Hudson to Weehawken Heights, New Jersey. The sun was shining on the water and the birds were singing in the trees as he climbed to the ledge where he met Burr and two of his friends. Pistols were provided, and the two men moved several paces apart. The word was given. The weapons were fired. Hamilton dropped, fatally wounded. Burr escaped unharmed. Hamilton was carried back to his home in the city, where he died the following day. The services that Alexander Hamilton rendered this country can never be fully measured. He came here from one of the smallest islands in the West Indies, unknown and alone. All his thoughts and energies were spent in helping to make this country free and strong. At times he was misunderstood, but the plans that he made and the policies that he outlined have proved worthwhile. During the Revolution, he was a brave and valuable officer. After the war, he served as a statesman of the first rank. He was one of the ablest men in Washington's cabinet. His decision to pay all the debts of the nation won for us the respect and friendship of all the countries of Europe. His plans for raising taxes have been followed, with some changes to the present day.